Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 24th of August, Anno Domini 2013, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And I'm Mark Murphy.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, but before we do the news, I'm going to introduce our guest of the day. This is Mark Murphy, but you already know that. What you may not know is that he is the president and the CEO, you slacker, of Greenlight Networks. Greenlight is an internet provider in town that brings fiber to your home. Sorry, I could hardly say that as I was drooling. And we'll be talking to him throughout this this show today. So if you have questions about fiber, and questions about how it works and all of that kind of stuff. The one question we will not answer is, why isn't it in my house right now? Although we may talk about why and where and how and what the difficulties of putting fiber in. So ruminate on that and give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415 if you want to talk to Mark about fiber stuff. You want to talk to us about anything, we're here. That's what this is all about. Before we do that, however, we will get to the news. Yesterday, Microsoft announced that Steve Ballmer will retire as CEO within the next 12 months. They said that Ballmer will remain in post through its transformation to a devices and services company that empowers people for the activities they value most, which is an interesting phrase. The term software wasn't really in there anywhere. Ballmer says, "There is never a perfect time for this type of transition, but now is the right time. We have embarked on a new strategy with a new organization, and we have an amazing senior leadership team. My original thoughts on timing would have had my retirement happen in the middle of our company's transformation to a devices and services company. We need a CEO who will be here longer term for this new direction." Ballmer joined Microsoft.
Right? I didn't know Steve Ballmer sounded like Richard Nixon.
Nobody knew that. It's
Developers.
Ballmer first joined Microsoft back in 1980, serving as the company's 30th employee. He was actually the first business manager hired by Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, who Ballmer succeeded as CEO in 2000. As Ballmer sees out the remainder of his time at Microsoft's helm, the company's board of directors has set up a committee to oversee the appointment of his successor. The committee will be chaired by John Thompson, and will also include chairman of the board, Bill Gates. The board is committed to the effective transformation of Microsoft to a successful services and successful devices and services company, added Thompson. As this work continues, we are focused on selecting a new CEO to work with the company's senior leadership team to chart the company's course and execute it in a highly competitive industry. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Steve Ballmer is retiring from Microsoft. And the choices are too little, too late, oh, that's too bad, a black day indeed, and bring back Bill, bring back Bill. So far, we have 28 votes, and too little, too late is winning. And of course, you'll have more to say about this. I know you will. So check out our forums. And in the forums about the poll, you'll see one that says 24 August 13, Steve Ballmer is retiring from Microsoft. And you can give us your thoughts. You can also give us your thoughts by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And of course, you can also talk to Mark Murphy, who is the president and CEO of Green Light Networks. And if you want to find out more about Green Light Networks, just go to greenlightnets.com. In the meantime, we will talk to Larry from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Hi. I've been helped, or recruited, I should say, in one of our local nonprofits that I help with to assist in moving, replacing their Windows server. So they've got an old server, which is like Windows Server 2003, and they bought a piece of hardware that's got Windows Server 2012 on it. And here's the issue. The Active Directory on the old server had been a problem for many years, so they didn't want to do the standard DC promote, although I think that command has actually changed in Server 2012. But they just wanted to rebuild Active Directory with the current users. They'll move the files over, make sure the ownership and permissions are the same, and I can help them with that. And here's, though, where I run into problems. They want both on the same network at the same time, and the new server has the same domain name. They want it on the same network so they can install the printer drivers, get those working, do the Windows updates, make sure the applications and all the updates are there, the connections to the Internet. So I'm trying to figure out how to take a Windows server like Windows 2012 and just disable the login functionality so the existing clients don't get confused by having a new server with the same domain name on the network simultaneously.
Yeah, you don't. Which is why you're having a problem figuring it out. Here's the way this actually should work. You should set the server up and give it a bogus domain name.
Okay. It's already been created. I've read that changing domain names can be problematic.
Well, all right, then.
But less problematic than you having two servers with the same domain name.
Yeah, it can be. It can be problematic. So having it same domain name is fine. Just don't put it on the network. Or do it on a Saturday when nobody's there. Move everything over. Install all your... I mean, it's just updates and drivers, right? Everything else is done.
Well, but there's a variety of printers, and the applications aren't all installed. They'll be helping with doing those throughout a period of time. One guy does the dispatching stuff. One guy does the other stuff. There's all these little applications. So it's not something we can really do under a... We can't get them all coordinated at the same point in time. So in essence, you're telling me there's no way we can like disable the login services. So
no, I wouldn't do that. What I would do is I would set one of them, either one, up as a secondary domain server, and then do all your installation and yada yada yada, and then promote that to the new to a primary, demote the other one, promote this one.
When you do that, though, doesn't it take the current Active Directory structure from the current one?
But they're the same, right?
Well, yes, but the current server has had so many problems with Active Directory, they didn't want to propagate any of the problems to the new one. They wanted a clean install and start from scratch. So that's which is fine, and moving the users, they've already recreated the users in the current one and moved over a lot of the files. So now we're just kind of at a point where we need to get the applications and all the updates and the printer drivers on, and they were hoping they could put it on the network but just somehow like disable net login or something so none of the clients would try and connect to
it. I honestly wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't
I don't think
that. Okay.
I don't think that's going to be as useful. I understand what you're saying and what you're trying to do, but honestly, you just need to bite the bullet and have it all happen at once. Do it as fast as you can. Install everything. Get it all installed. Get it up. Get it on the online and be done. This drib and drab stuff, when you're talking about servers, particularly Active Directory servers, not a really good idea. I'm sorry.
Okay. I didn't know if there was, you know, I read bits and pieces where supposedly, you know, like stopping the net login service would kind of.
I'll be honest with you, I've never done that.
No.
And I don't honestly know that it would. It might work.
Could you do a disable login access to all the users on the old server?
New server.
Well, you want to disable it on the old one so they all start using the new one, right? Well,
no, he doesn't want them to use the new one until they've got all the drivers and software.
Yeah, I found a little thing where you can basically remove the client from the domain, and then once we do all that, we just swap over to the new one, then we add them to the new domain. So we had a plan for moving them from one server to the other in terms of clients.
Right.
We just didn't have a plan for putting them both on the network at the same time to finish the application installs and all the print drivers and the stuff. We wanted to test all the print drivers and this and that, so we weren't there all night.
No, I get it. Well, I do get it. It may be doable. I've just never done it.
Okay.
And the answer is usually you have to be there all night.
Yeah. Well, this is for their dispatching software and stuff for a volunteer fire department. I was trying to be as
unobtrusive as possible.
And heaven forbid there's a fire in the middle of it and they need dispatched.
Yeah, I get that. No, I do get that. I absolutely do. But I don't know what else to tell you. It may be doable if somebody else has done it. I just don't trust it.
Yeah, yeah. And in essence, you've helped because there's no easy way to do it.
So, it's Microsoft. That's a given.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if there was some magic combination of services you could disable that would render it, not a server temporarily, but guess not.
Nope, sorry.
Okay. How about stopping file services? Then there's nothing to log into. And now they can still log into the domain.
Right.
Yeah. Well versed on how they advertise the domain on the network, so you could avoid having the client see two domain servers.
Right.
So, okay. Well, anyway, thanks, guys. I appreciate your show. You guys do a great job.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Care.
Yeah, every time I've done server migration or heard about server migration, it's you shut everybody out. You can't get to the server, period, until we get the new one up and running.
Right.
And so you try to do it. You know, you start like on a Friday afternoon and hope you're done by Monday morning.
Well, yes, and that's in terms of getting the domain itself up. Once it's up, you can install all the software you want. And then it's just a matter of you want access to the new stuff, reboot, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, we've given you permission, now you just reboot and it's there. But I wouldn't want to be the one to try to...
That's probably why you hear about so many people still running Windows 2000 Server. Because it's such a pain to migrate.
They are a pain to migrate.
But the danger there is that Microsoft stopped releasing security patches years ago. And so all these 2000 boxes are horribly vulnerable to a lot of stuff that's still flying around the internet.
Yeah, even when they were fully patched, they were horrible. Never mind. We'll just move on. We'll just move on from there. Microsoft is going to be a services company now. So
yeah. Well, so now that it's a devices and service.
Yeah.
But their device has to run on OS. So now OS is under devices. See, it's kind of like Apple.
Maybe.
Apple sells computers that just happen to have Mac OS on them, and they sell iPads.
Or does Apple sell Mac OS, which just happens to need a computer to run that they sell?
Right. Yeah. That's sort of been the eternal debate. Is Apple a hardware company or a software company?
Right.
And the fact that they took computer out of their name implies now that they are a software company, and their software only happens to run on these hardwares.
So will Microsoft change their name to Micro Dev?
Yeah, just Micro.
Just Micro.
It used to be two words, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the beginning?
Yeah, well, no, the S was capitalized in the middle.
In intercap.
And it had an intercap, and now it does not. You know, you get a little older and your inner cap is gone. That's how that works. At any rate, we still have Mark Murphy, who is president and CEO of Greenlight. Now, I have a question. Since no one has called in, I get to ask my questions. That's the privileges of hosting. You get to ask a question, too, if you like.
Yep.
And Mike, you get to as well. Now, what Greenlight does is provide... You're an internet service provider.
That's correct, yep.
And so you provide fiber to the home.
To the home and to other largely residential areas, so apartment complexes, places like that.
Right. But you wouldn't be adverse to doing businesses as well.
We would not be, but you know, I think our feeling is there's a lot of other choices in the market for business services today. The biggest gap that we saw was in the residential space.
What brought you to this job? I mean, to doing this?
It was a few things. I mean, I've been in the Rochester area for about 20 years now. I looked around at the landscape of what was going on. I was part of the team to help get fiber tech up and going. So I saw what fiber could do in the business community, what competition could do, and how customers responded to competition and using fiber. And, you know, just saw that there was a big gap in this community relative to fiber to the home. Obviously, as you know, Verizon's been rolling out their Fios product for a number of years now. Google announced, I mean, they had a huge national search that went on for the better part of a year, and they finally awarded it to Kansas City. And I had an opportunity to go down to Kansas City and meet with some of the Google folks and see their fiber space as part of a larger fiber to the home conference. And, you know, it was just fun to see the community respond and embrace what they're doing, how neighborhoods were really competing to be first to get the fiber. You know, they haven't launched their small business version of the fiber service either. And, you know, I think from our standpoint, we'll certainly, if a business customer calls us, a small business customer, and wants a service, we'll certainly find a way to work with them. But our focus, first and foremost, is on the residential space, because I think that's the most underserved in this community in particular.
And I completely agree.
Should we go back to the fundamentals a little bit? Why is fiber so much better, and why do we all want
it? Good point.
I think when you look at phone and cable, who traditionally provided service to the homes, that's all done over wires and using electricity. And you know, electricity doesn't work well with water. So when you're underground, or you have, in the case of cable, radio frequency interference, all those types of things, you know, it's not an ideal medium to transmit data like fiber is. So if you had a choice, and you guys are in the business, when you're connecting up servers to each other, you're not using generally coax cable, you're not using phone wire, you're using fiber, and you're using fiber jumper. So it's kind of the same concept, except it's over a much bigger area. And just the expansion possibilities and the bandwidth capacity of fiber is far greater than anything you can do, certainly from a cost perspective, over the other two modalities or media.
Right. And in terms of speed, your low end service is 100 megabits down, 20 megabits up.
That's correct. And then we'll go up to a gig for the folks that want that. And, you know, and that's something that we'll continue to try and make more affordable as we go. But I think, you know, if you look at a price per megabit, or even if it's just our base rate of $50, it's as competitive as what you see in the market for just their standard services, and each have their own standard service that they market. That $50, there's no, we don't believe in modem fees. We don't believe in all the other things that some of the other, I know we get a lot of calls and questions on that. And it's not a promotional rate. That's the rate is the rate, because the other thing we believe is that, you know, if there's one thing that drives people crazy is the notion that, you know, Nick's paying one rate for his service, Steve's paying a rate for his service. It's the same service, and they live next door to each other. Why are they paying something different?
Right.
It's all America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Rosen.
And I'm Mark Murphy.
And we are Soundbites. Our guest, of course, today is Mark Murphy, President and CEO of Greenlight Networks. And our caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. Tom.
Try again, Tom.
Try again, Tom. Not sure quite what happened there. We're having one of those days.
Yeah, we are.
Everything signed off from Google, except I think the broadcast is still going.
I should try the new Hangout app I got on the iPad. They just released it.
There you go.
It said they were going to fix the problem.
Right, which is what they said the last time and the time before.
Well, you can't just join any Hangout. You have to be specifically invited.
But I did specifically invite you.
You get invited in the Google Plus app, and it wasn't opening the Hangouts app to actually do the Hangout. Why they have two apps is a different problem.
That's a separate issue altogether, I'm sure. Well, that way I don't know why. I have no idea. I have no idea why. So we got him back. Excellent. Tom from Rochester, New York.
Yes. Thanks, Nick.
Sorry about that.
I bought a Chromebook, and I love it. But I'm getting this thing. It's a SYNC Air update sync passphrase. Why am I getting that?
And when do
it's
you
in
get
Chrome.
This? When do you get this?
When I boot up.
Immediately when you boot up?
No, when I go to Chrome.
Okay, so it boots up and you log in.
Right.
And that's when it happens?
When I go to my Chrome browser,
yeah,
this error pops up.
And then it goes away and doesn't come back?
Right.
Okay, what it sounds like is happening is one of the things that you can do with Chrome on all of your platforms is sync them so that when you, for example, add a bookmark from your desktop, it will show up in your Chromebook and on your tablet and on your phone and everywhere else.
Okay, it's asking for a passphrase.
Right, and if it's asking for a passphrase, what it wants you to do is somewhere on one of your devices, either you set a passphrase or it wants the passphrase that you logged into Google with.
I tried that, but it didn't work. It wouldn't take.
All right, what it sounds like is that you set a passphrase somewhere.
Separate from the account password.
Right, in Chrome itself.
Could it just be that the machine's not connected to the internet yet?
No, it's connected.
Okay. Because there's always that timing issue between the time you boot up and the time the Wi-Fi connects to the network.
Uh-huh.
We see that on the Macs a lot, especially when you wake it from sleep.
Okay.
When it wakes up from sleep, there's about 10, maybe 15 seconds before the Wi-Fi reconnects. And if you have a web browser open at the time, you'll get a not connected to the internet error.
Okay.
Which is technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
Right.
But if you wait 5 seconds, it will have finished reconnecting to Wi-Fi and then come back up again.
Right. And let me ask you again, is the error sync error sign in again or sync error update sync password phrase?
Password phrase.
No. What's the whole error message?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me go on it.
Because I can't, I mean, for, you know, one word out of an entire error message.
Right, it says sync everything, encryption option. You have already had data that is encrypted using different version of Google's account password. Please enter it below.
Yeah, there you go. You somewhere along the line, you set a passphrase somewhere in one of your Google Chrome browsers. And it is now asking you for that passphrase.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that I cannot help you with.
I hear you.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to figure that one out. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Thank you anyhow.
Can he just go to each of his browsers and
reset
the password?
He can certainly go to each browser that he owns.
Okay.
And remove and undo the pass. I mean, you know, say no password required.
Where is the? I mean, that's probably hiding in settings somewhere, right?
Yeah, it's somewhere in the settings. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And the settings, of course, are from that little three bar thing over in the corner.
I'll see if I can find where you set that and post the link.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, and our friend Jerry Seward over in the Hangout. He's saying it's the two-step verification. Not sure that's true, but it could be.
Could be, yeah.
Go ahead.
Guys, do you remember setting up two-step verification?
No, I don't.
Okay. One of the things you can do with your Google account and many other accounts these days is when you log in on a new device, it will send a text message to your phone with a code so that you need to enter that code in as a second step.
Okay.
So it may be asking for that, but if you don't remember setting it up, it's probably not that, but it could be.
And particularly if you're not getting any text messages on your phone.
Yeah, I'm not getting any.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, good luck. That's sometimes it's just you got to remember your password.
Yeah, and I found the setting in Chrome. It's under Advanced Sync Settings, and I'm going to post that link here. In just a moment.
I had someone yesterday tell me whenever she creates a new password, she has a program that generates a 24-character random password,
mm-hmm.
which she then memorizes for that service.
Usually that program memorizes it for you, like 1Password or KeePass or one
she
of those.
She wrote her own program.
Oh, not a password manager, a random number generator.
A random generator, exactly. And so she now has her own. And I thought, you know, God bless her. And God help the guy who argues with her about anything. 6 years ago at 4:32 in the afternoon, you said. Because she's clearly going to remember that. But that's neither here nor there. Our next caller is Ray from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Ray. What's up?
I'm having a problem trying to get a USB modem working on my laptop. It's my wife's USB modem. It works on her laptop. I've got the... It's a Verizon Wireless. It's got the access managers installed, but when I plug it in, it flashes like it's working, but the access manager says it cannot detect the device.
Oh, so it's a cellular router, not a modem.
Well, it's a USB modem for, I guess, to get a cellular signal, yes.
Okay, so you're not plugging a telephone line into it.
No, it's plugging right into the USB, and
okay.
You can get access that way.
All right, it's USB cellular. Okay. Generally speaking, updating the drivers from the carrier will fix issues like that. Check your device manager to make sure the USB device is actually detected.
I do see it in the device manager, but it says everything seems like it's working properly. I can't figure where to get the drivers because when I go out to their website, I can't find anything that even says, hey, here's the drivers.
Well, where did your wife get the drivers?
She got it installed on her laptop, you know, from work.
Okay.
You said it was Verizon?
Yeah. The website that they give you doesn't even exist. The page doesn't exist.
If you Google the model number of the card, that sometimes helps. But what most people are doing these days is they're getting away from those USB routers and just going to a Wi-Fi router. So instead of plugging it into a USB port on one computer, it generates a Wi-Fi signal that any of your devices, computers, tablets, whatnot, can access. And in fact, multiple devices can access at the same time.
Okay, but we were trying to figure if I could put it on the laptop, like if we're traveling and I just need to get a signal.
That's right, I understand that.
So, it would work only on that one device.
Do you know the model number?
It's a UML295. And I was told by a couple...
You can't go on Verizon without giving them somebody's zip code.
Okay. Yeah, and I even talked to one of their specialists, and they said that device only is set up to work on one laptop and can't work on multiple laptops.
One at a time.
Okay.
But it should work on multiple, unless they hard code the MAC address, which...
That's just...
Stupid.
No, I suppose that's just so they'll be able to sell more of
them. True, yeah, so they'll force you to buy more. We're Googling around. Someone will have figured out a way to do it. USB, yeah, they call it a... I wish people...
It's a USB modem, UML295.
It doesn't modulate your electric signal into audio to send over a telephone line where it's demodulated at the other end.
Right. But that's because you're a geek.
Yeah.
To everybody else, a modem is the thing that gives you
internet access. Yeah.
So... You know, someday it'll be...
Here we go. The UML295 does not support VZ Access Manager. So, okay, that you can't use that.
Okay. I saw that too, but...
I found plug-and-play USB modem. So Windows should load the driver for it itself. That's interesting.
But it doesn't even detect the thing. When I plug it in, it doesn't say hardware detected. I mean, the only way I see it is I go into the device manager. That's kind of the confusing thing. Can't quite figure. And I got no way of getting the drivers because I can't find anywhere on their website, you know, for that model to download any drivers.
Yeah, it implies that there are no drivers because it's plug and play.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not seeing anywhere to download drivers.
Here we go. You use the Verizon Mobile Broadband Manager. You do not use the VZ Access Manager.
So you need to download the Verizon
Mobile Broadband Manager. And let me see if I can find where to get that.
And we'll post it on our site. But you can also Google Verizon Broadband, what?
Broadband, yeah, I Googled the UML295 driver, and it's pointing me to different places to go. And here's a support button. Check out support for your device.
Yeah, the website is not very intuitive. Find things.
Articles, upgrade, add new device, changing features. How about just download? Driver, interesting. Well, maybe if somebody else has that same device, they might have another tip for us?
Because I know, like in the manual, it says go to mbd.vzw.com, but that page doesn't even exist.
But nice. Very, very nice.
Mobile Device Manager, mdm.vzw.com. How about that? Maybe it's a typo.
MBM?
Mobile Device Manager.
MDM. I can give that a try when I get home.
No, that didn't work.
Well, we'll look it up and see what we can do. But in the meantime, your best bet is to Google that phrase. What was it?
The model name.
Yeah, the model name.
Yeah, sir. Yeah. UML 295 Mobile Device Manager or driver, something like that.
Okay, but it should be able to work across any different laptop. It's not designated really just for one.
Well, that's what they say.
That's what they say. It needs a USB port. It works with Windows XP, SP 3 and later, and Mac OS 10.5 and later.
Okay.
Yeah, the theory is it comes right up and says, okay, let's install.
Yeah, plug and play modem. What OS are you running it under?
I'm on Windows 7, and her machine's on Windows 7.
So that implies that the driver should auto-load.
Yeah, it says right here.
That's what plug and play is supposed to mean. That's why we call it plug and pray.
It says right here, first plug and play USB modem is simple to use and install. No more fumbling with installation CD or having to download drivers. Now, what they might have done is once it installs the drivers, it erases them from the device.
That could be. That.
So you can't reinstall them.
So we had to manually copy a driver from one computer to the other? Not very easily.
Not easily at all. But we will continue to look this up, but we don't have an answer for you right now, and I am sorry.
Okay, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. So it's a $20 device. When you do a two-year contract, it's $200 if you buy it outright.
Right.
And it's from Panatech, so maybe they have the driver.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, and everybody is saying there are no drivers.
Yep. I'm seeing a lot more people are getting the Wi-Fi cellular router, so they don't have to plug it into a computer. You don't have to mess with routers and drivers, and it will work with multiple devices. So you got your computer, your laptop, your tablet, you know, everything. Usually five devices at once.
Right. As a Verizon customer, you can do that from your phone. But
well, if you have a smartphone, that often has hotspotting in it,
right?
Or Wi-Fi sharing something, depending on what the carrier calls it. You turn your cell phone into a wireless router, so then your computer sees a Wi-Fi signal on the phone, and the phone uses cellular to get to the internet. But if especially if you do have a contract, I might even just take your laptop into a Verizon store and tell them to make it work.
Yeah.
That might
work.
Here
it is. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Give it a shot. That's probably your best bet. What do you think?
I think that is your best bet.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
If you've got a contract, let them do their job. We're here with Mark Murphy, who is the president and CEO of Greenlight Networks, and we've been talking to him a little bit about fiber to the home, which I love. Now, how much time we got?
We got
the break.
Half a minute.
Okay, we'll just take a break, and then when we come back, I've got questions for you. So we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Mike Odom, Mark Murphy, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites, and we will be right back with a whole lot more of this kind of nonsense. I don't know why you're listening, but apparently you're just too lazy to change the channel. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Roden.
I'm Mark Murphy.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, living in the past, are we? I'm Nick. We are sound. Oh, for Pete's sake. Look, we're sound.
They just crossed their streams. We're all screwed up.
People, exactly. We're professionals here, and don't you forget it. Before we go back to the phones, I would like to remind you that we are talking with Mark Murphy, who's the president and CEO of Greenlight. And I have a question for him before we go back to the phones. I have an entire page full of comments here from the former chief financial of Time Warner, the CEO of Time Warner, the CEO of Frontier, the chief lobbyist for Comcast. Comcast has a chief lobbyist. Chief executive of Cox Communications, Bright House Networks, blah, 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 blah. All of them saying that essentially two things. First, gigabit Ethernet is ridiculous. Nobody can use it because there's no website that's sending out gigabit stuff. And secondly, nobody's asking for it anyway, so we're not going to build it. So how come you guys are offering gigabit?
Well, I think there's a couple things.
Is that a softball question?
Yes, thank you for that. And I always kind of liken it back to the old dial-up internet days, because back then, who could have dreamed that, you know, you'd be downloading 100 megabit or 100 gigabit files like we are today? And I think some of it is, if you build it, they will come. And I think by giving people, the developers, an opportunity to use that kind of bandwidth, I think that's important. I think, you know, the other thing for us and for the Googles of the world, to some degree, we don't have a horse in the race when it comes to TV. And so when you look at where all the bandwidth consumption on the internet is going right now and what's driving that consumption up, and Cisco and everybody else is saying it's going to be 500 times greater not 5 years from now than it is today, it's all people streaming video on the internet. And
yeah,
so
we were talking about that before the show, is that, you know, 10 years ago on dial-up modems, you know, 1 megabyte was a big file to download, and you hated when someone sent you a bunch of pictures in your email because it took forever to download. We got so many calls from people saying that, you know, my email stopped coming in. Well, you didn't wait long enough because someone sent you 10 pictures. And nowadays we're downloading gigabyte files because we want to stream that movie.
Right, right. And so, you know, and you kind of fast forward this not too far in the distant future, and you've got multiple devices in your house that are streaming video, and more people are working from their home now, whether that's when they get home from the office or if that is their office. And so that's where we're seeing the biggest demand and the biggest drivers. And I think a lot of people look at their cable bill or DirecTV bill or whatever it is at the end of the month, and they say, hey, look, I'm paying a lot of money for channels that I may not be watching, I don't care to watch, but if I can go to Netflix, and, you know, what's neat to watch the evolution here, and the content folks are doing great things now with the original stuff that Netflix has put out there, House of Cards, I've been watching, and or if it's just a matter of kind of catching up on Breaking Bad episodes that you've heard about or whatever else. You know, the way people are consuming entertainment is changing, and I think, you know, folks like Viacom, who just announced recently that they're going to start streaming content over the PlayStation that's coming out in the fall, that's pretty exciting, and I think that's what consumers want, and we're just trying to anticipate that. And, you know, again, we don't have a horse in the TV race, so we're not trying to protect that side of the business and worrying about, oh my gosh, what happens to my television subscribers. Our whole mission is really to enable people to do whatever it is they want to do on the internet, and so we're going to give them a whole lot of bandwidth and big pipes to do it with, and, you know, we're not going to pay them for every download that, or make them pay for each additional download that they make.
God bless you.
You know, and that's because, you know, we're a new entry into the market, and we've got to be competitive. We've got to be better than what the incumbents are.
And I'll tell you right now, when my wife is doing Farmville and my daughter is Skyping with a friend, and I'm updating all the websites that I'm involved in and streaming a Netflix movie, things start to stutter. So there may be indeed no one single website that wants to send me 100 megabit or gigabit speed, but all of them put together, you're darn right I could use that kind of speed. There's no question of that.
And it's not the one computer in the house anymore. It's the desktop, the laptop, the 3 tablets, and the 4 phones.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, on Sunday nights when we're doing sound bites in Second Life.
Yep.
And your son is doing games on his whatever it is.
Yep.
You stutter like mad in the
yep.
thing. And that has everything to do with bandwidth. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Henrietta, New York. Thank you for being patient, Ray. What can we do for you?
Thank you for taking my call, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Great show. I get three things. Number one, every time I'm running XP, it's on my desktop. Every time I do a shutdown or a restart, it comes up with that check this thing. And it gives you that prompt if you don't want to do it to hit any key in 5 seconds or whatever.
Yeah.
That does not work. It does like the 10, 15-minute three-phase test every single time. It's driving me nuts.
Yep.
I would say there's something wrong with your hard drive.
That's exactly the problem.
It's getting ready to fail, and you should back up your data and maybe replace that drive. The check disk means that Windows found something wrong with the directory, which tells it where all your files are, and it needs to check your disk to see if it can still find all your files. One of these days, it's probably not going to find any of your files.
Okay. The other thing is, every time I do a restart or a shut off and reboot, it says Windows updates, 1 of 8, every single time, and it loads all 8 of them. You think it took it? Next time I reboot it, there it is again. Windows updates, 1 of 8, and it reloads all 8 of them.
And that may well be the same problem. If there is a problem on that hard drive, and the area where the problem exists is where Windows is saving those files, There you go.
Okay, last thing. After a few minutes, my CPU fan goes real high, like it's a jet on a runway. I've cleaned the fans. I read the thermal grease on the processor. Thing is clean as a whistle. But
have you tried running it with the cover off and figuring out where that heat is coming from? I almost guarantee you it's coming from the hard drive.
Okay, because I really don't feel that much. You know, you put your hands behind the fans. Really doesn't feel. I've felt hotter things from laptops and stuff.
The other thing to check is your task manager to see what process is using the CPU. The fans generally run as fast as they need to cool the machine based on the process usage. So if there's some process using a lot of your processor, I guess.
Yeah.
it can run the fans hot. So like right now on my computer, since I'm streaming the video, my flash plugin is using a huge amount of processing power. So my fans are going crazy trying to help keep it cool. So if something if you have a runaway process that's eating your CPU, that could make the fans run hot.
There's also the fact that what's happening is it's running the fan based on what it's being told by the sensor.
Right.
If you're running an XP machine, how old is it? 8 years old?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. It may well be that whole machine is just kind of on its last legs. 8 years is an old computer. And it may well be that various pieces are beginning to break down. There may be nothing overheating in your machine, except for the fact the fan is being told by a sensor that's failing that something is overheating.
Okay, I'm going to have to save my pennies.
I'm sorry.
Great.
Yeah, the reality is that when a machine gets that old, stuff starts to go. God knows my knees aren't the way they were when I was 30.
Okay, guys, thanks for your help.
Thanks, Ray.
Sure.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it may not hurt to take the machine into a dealer just to have them check it out and see what's happening with it. But yeah, check your task manager. What is it? Control-Alt-Delete on Windows. And then hit Task Manager, see if one of your processes is eating up too much of your CPU. Now, don't be worried if your idle process says 99%, because that means the computer is 99% idle.
Yeah, the higher your idle process, the better off you are.
We make our computers faster and faster and faster, and they still spend 99% of their time waiting for you to do something.
Right.
But that 1%, we want to be really fast.
Right. Over in the Hangout, I said I wouldn't let this question be asked, but I have to read this whole thing because it's kind of cute. Mark says, when are they coming out to Fairport Residential? Or what complex do I have to move into to get this? I'll sell my house. That's kind of how we all feel at this point. A gigabit? Okay, where do I have to go to get it? That's the question. Now, I will say, because we're not letting him say, I will say that I personally signed up on their website to find out when it comes to my neighborhood, and I haven't gotten an email. Oh, I'm sorry, I know that's... But that'll be coming. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek. Tawaga. I went by Cheektowaga the other day. The reason I was out last week is we were taking my daughter back to college. Bittersweet. I gain a room, I lose a child. That's how it all it evens out somewhere along the line. And on the way back, of course, we went right by the Cheektowaga exit. And my poor wife, I woke her out of his own sleep screaming, Cheektowaga! What can we do for you, Joe?
Well, for your guest, I kind of want to ask, okay, what was the magic you actually executed to be able to do this at all? It's like, well, we have the phone company, and they have their DSL, and then, you know, way back, it was probably in the late 70s, I remember the international cable folks coming through the neighborhood saying, hey, would you like to subscribe and all that, and then they put up their infrastructure. So what magic sauce do you have that, like, let you put up a fiber network?
Well, I've been in the business for about 20 some years, and I've with both the phone and the cable guys. And you know, I think for us, it was the timing was good. Folks like Google and you know, out toward Cheektowaga, I think Verizon may even have FiOS rolled out nearby you.
No, actually, I could subscribe to FiOS if I wanted to. It's just it's more expensive than the alternative right now.
Right. So I think for us, it's you know we. There's fiber in the Rochester area, and there's fiber in other areas that we can get access to, and then building it ourselves. I think, you know, when you look at the economics now, they've changed a little bit. But, you know, I think also fundamentally for us, we don't have a large asset that we've been sitting on for hundreds of years that we've got to continue to find ways to monetize and to continue to grow. And, you know, for us, every customer we get is a new customer, and it's great for us. For a lot of the other folks, it's not all incremental, and so they've got to generate in some cases double digit cash flow year over year to their shareholders, and their shareholders don't get excited when they announce that they're going to build a fiber network. They don't like it. Right. But you know, oddly enough, in Verizon's case, I think the shareholders are really happy that they built that, because that's carrying a lot of that part of the business. You know, and so for us, I think, you know, I'm been in Rochester 20 years now. I love the community, and I think this is a community that can support that. And so ultimately, we're going to be as successful as the people in this community will let us be.
I think in the long run, one of the things that makes something like Rochester work, we're a high-tech town. And if I were wanting to bring a business somewhere and I went to the Chamber of Commerce or whoever you go to talk to about those things, one of the things that I would hope they would say to me is, oh, yeah, we have fiber for networking, so that when you bring in your company, because lots and lots of companies nowadays are either software based solely or at least have a major software component and a networked component and a get out into the internet component. If I can say, yeah, come to Rochester, we have fiber, that works a whole lot better than, yeah, come to Rochester, we don't have fiber. You know?
Well, so it sounds like either the telco or the cable co laid the fiber for you, and are you leasing it or did you buy it?
Actually, we don't acquire from either of those guys. I don't think they really want to help us out be successful.
Yeah, were there any regulatory hurdles? It was because as far as we've been hearing over the years, there's nothing stopping another internet provider coming to town other than the will and the money to put in whatever wire or conduit they want to use.
Yeah, I mean, we worked with the Public Service Commission in the last summer to get the things that we needed to get so that we could have access to the telephone poles and the conduits like any other CLEC does. The only difference is we're focused on the residential area as opposed to the business area.
You
so,
have to tell everybody what CLEC is.
Sorry, a competitive local exchange carrier. We've got to have a lot of acronyms in our business so that it seems like we know more than everybody else. But it's you know, we're acting like any other company that would be serving business customers, except we're taking care of residential customers.
Right, and CLEC really is a term from the telephone days, but what it seems to mean nowadays is somebody who provides communication to you.
Correct.
Basically.
The other thing I'd like to know about is pricing, and it really annoys me what Verizon is doing. They're charging this huge fee per month. And we know what that's doing. It's subsidizing their ONT. I'd rather buy the ONT outright and not have to rent it from them and have lower monthly access costs. Well, Google is pr- pretty much doing the same thing. They say $300 construction fee, they call it. They put the gear up, and as a result, we have $70 for a gig, symmetric. And that's the third thing that galls me. Why don't we have symmetric service?
Well, I speaking of the fee for a moment, the Greenlight's prices are listed on their website. But commercial companies, especially public companies with stockholders, have to charge as much as they can. Somebody has to pay for some part of it somewhere. Yeah.
Here's the other part of the deal. You may find someone. Well, listen, we got to take a break.
Yeah.
We'll stay on the line and we'll come back to you. But we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. With Steve Ray, Mike Odom, Mark Murphy, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. Whole nother hour of this nonsense coming up.
Show Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And I'm Mark Murphy.
And we have Joe from Chico on the line. We are Soundbites. And Joe had asked a question about charges. And I'm actually going to answer that because it will sound less self-serving coming from me. But here's the deal, Joe. If you take a look at the websites of, say, certain internet service providers, you will find that they do have a construction or installation fee. Often, however, they will waive part or all of that fee if you sign up for, say, a year of service. And that's partially the fact that they're installing a bunch of very, very new stuff. And somebody's going to have to pay for that. They can either add it to the monthly cost, or they can charge you up front. And I'm sure that the price many of them charge is not, in fact, the full price of the equipment. But they're going to charge you for something. And if you sign up for a year of service, then they know they're going to have you for a while, and then they can cut or remove that fee. And so I understand that. I don't necessarily like it either, but I certainly understand why they do it. One of the problems that we've had, we talk about how America has become a third-tier nation when it comes to internet service. Other places have phone service that's way faster than ours. Mm-hmm. Network service is way faster than ours. Part of that is the fact that we were first. And as Mark said earlier, pioneers are the guys with the arrows in their backs. And as Mark said earlier, the fact that they have to upgrade all of their infrastructure that is, in fact, currently working.
120 years of copper wire buried everywhere.
Yep. That's a hurdle that you have to get over. But if you're South Korea and you've never had internet access to people and you're starting out today, you buy the fastest because it's a business decision. And some companies have made the decision to bring out the best and the fastest and the nicest, but that's going to include some costs. And others have decided not to upgrade to that best and fastest and brightest and not incur those costs. And that's just the way business works. There's no, Tanstaffel, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Did that make any sense at all to you, Joe? Is Joe not there?
Should be.
Joe?
Maybe Joe went to commercial.
Hello?
There we are. Oh, there he is.
Okay.
Joe went to commercial. No,
yeah,
sorry.
No, I'm good.
We went to our underwriters and Joe went to commercial.
That.
No.
It's a loose connector there. Sorry about that. It's also population density.
Right.
We're a very spread out nation, and it's just plain expensive to run all those cables everywhere. Whereas someplace like South Korea, they have a lot of population density.
Well, even in their rural areas, it's probably as bad as us. But the government, was it broadband.gov, did a thing about nationwide broadband speeds, and they said 90% of our country has speeds greater than 1 megabit. Okay, 1 megabit's not very fast.
Right.
And 10% of the country is a lot of people in rural areas.
Right. Well, and that's one of the reasons that Google has their Loon project, where they're actually going to put... What a great idea. And Loon is the right name. I have no idea if this is going to work, but I love the idea. They loft a bunch of balloons with wireless repeaters on them and provide wireless access to rural areas by balloon. I love this idea. I don't care if it works or not. I just love the idea.
It'll certainly be better on the latency. You know, you can't get around the physics of having to go up to a satellite and back down. That's just a long, long trip as far as radio waves are concerned.
Right, whereas if you're only going up a few hundred feet,
you
win.
I really wish the internet providers would kind of take the lead of T-Mobile. T-Mobile is another carrier that said, you can buy your handset outright if you want, and then we'll lower your monthly fees. That would just be wonderful.
Yep. And they can do that because they're fourth place, and they need to differentiate themselves somehow.
Right, and the reality is if they're on... mute your mic on the Hangout. Now I've lost my train of thought. If they're doing... never mind, I've completely lost my train of thought.
Well, I wonder if your guest could speak to symmetrical speeds, too, because you think about it. Okay, we got this wonderful YouTube video I'm trying to upload. You know, if you have applied for it, it can be arbitrary length. You got this hour-long video. It's going to take forever on my 1 megabit up connection. I mean, don't they realize that they're now operating with a false premise that downstream speed is much faster than the upstream speed?
Well, some of that is just the equipment is less, generally speaking, from a carrier deployment standpoint, it's less expensive to put asynchronous equipment in the field than it is to put the stuff that provides synchronous service. Now, that being said, ultimately...
You mean asymmetrical?
Yes.
Versus asymmetrical. Yeah.
Correct.
And on the other side, most people don't upload much. You upload a URL. And you download a giant website.
Right. I mean, I think most traffic profiles you see from carriers are about 3-to-1 down to up, just in terms of actual usage. Now, you could make the argument, I guess, that that's just because of the way, that's the way they provide the service. But, you know, really, when you look at it, even on a synchronous, if you looked across the LAN even, you would see that kind of traffic profile.
You got backup services like Crash Plan, iDrive, Carbonite. They're getting more and more popular.
Yeah, but at 20 megabits per second, you've got some pretty fast upload. And the reality is if they've, you know, even somebody like Greenlight, who's providing fiber, has a limited amount of bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And 99% of the time, I would rather they dedicate the majority of that bandwidth to download rather than upload.
Oh, sure. I love to get my Ubuntu DVD really fast.
Well, exactly. And when I back up, well, of course, I'm using rsync, so I only back up the pieces that have changed on any file. So for me, after that first backup, it's pretty quick. But for anybody, backing up new files, moving stuff into storage, whatever that may happen to be, I would rather get my stuff down faster and wait a little longer. Well, I'll let that happen overnight. I don't care. And I would rather get this.
Think of it. Your computer crashes. You need to do a restore. Yeah, you want all guns a-blazing for the downstream.
That's right. More than for the upstream. And so if I can have fast download... No. If I can have ludicrous speed download and fast upload, that makes me happy. You know, 100 megabit down and 20 megabit up, that's a decent ratio for me. And I suspect for most people.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much for chatting with me and for holding me over the break.
Thanks. Thanks, Joe. I will say that Jerry Seward in the group chat over on the Hangout has said, Cheektowaga, an old Indian name meaning near the airport, which I thought was kind of funny. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff I guess those are trade-offs that you guys make every day, you know, making that decision, what's the up, what's the down.
Yeah, and some of that's just based on the equipment that we have and what's in the network and how to best utilize the network. And you know, really our ultimate goal is how do we keep the business simple enough that we can provide the services that we can as affordably as we possibly can. I mean, if you look at the way we chose to do it, we're not rolling out email service because there's a lot of places you can go and get that for free.
Right.
So we've just tried to really streamline the business as much as we can so that we can give people a whole lot of bandwidth for not a lot of money relative to what's out there. And I think, you know, because it's over fiber, we don't run into as many of the operational difficulties in upkeep. As Steve said, you know, if you're maintaining a 120-year-old copper network,
It's a lot to take on.
And, you know, some of it still has a big paper cables that, you know, that'll yep. flood and everything else, and electricity and water don't mix well. So they are...
And electricity and magnetism. How, you know, we were talking about this earlier, but there's got to be places where you run copper and you run
power.
Regular wire that you're interfering with power
yep.
lines somewhere else, whereas fiber doesn't care.
Right, right.
You could wrap it around a power cord if you wanted to.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. But, you know, I mean, is the folks, is one of your emailers just... cited. I mean, the challenge we've got is how do you deploy this stuff? And it's not easy to deploy. It's not as easy as the Loon project. We don't get to hang balloons and do it that way. Although
I got
to figure out if we can try that somewhere. But you know, to try and just keep up.
You
with
You can tether one in my backyard. Yeah. I'm giving you that permission right you. Now.
Thanks. But you know, in some neighborhoods, you got to climb fences and you got to knock on every door to bring it down the street. And but we're going to keep doing it, and it really kind of comes down to where people want us to deploy. And we've kind of copied a lot of the Google playbook because I think the way that they're doing it is great. I mean, they're not necessarily doing it the old way, which is we got to go and touch every block. It's where do people want the service? Where is the demand? Let's go there first, and then continue to roll it out that way. So
sure. And so for those of you who want this type of service, you might go to the website of the sort of place that provides this service and look and see if they have a sign-up page where you can sign up your neighborhood.
And you're not committing to buy anything. You're just signing up. And
that basically tells them, oh, there's 15 people in this neighborhood who are interested in it, but there's 243 in this neighborhood. Maybe we'll go here first.
Right.
You know, I get it. That's, I signed up. I'm ready. Have I mentioned I'm ready? Okay, as long as you understand, I'm so ready. But that's the deal with that sort of thing. No, there's, you know, they don't do magic. They don't magically figure out there's 200 people in a neighborhood. They have to hear that there's that kind of interest. So when it comes to that, you know what? You know, it's what they say. Building the first one out is $50,000. Building the second one out is a nickel. So, you know, the more you can amortize. I'm sure those numbers are completely wrong, but that's not the point. The point is, if you can amortize the putting in of the major block of hardware over a bunch of houses, then that neighborhood is going to get precedence over someplace where like four people want it. All right, back to the phones. We have Christian. Does this say Hartford? Hartford, Connecticut? How, you've called the wrong show, Christian. Well, welcome.
Well, you know, I was hoping maybe I could get those Greenlight guys to come out here at some point. So.
There you go. That's one for Hartford.
Okay.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
Well, I used to work for a competitive local exchange carrier, and one of the problems we had with it, you know, we would lease our lines and buy bandwidth from the incumbent provider, which, you know, puts you in direct competition with them. So one of the issues we had was that the prices they would give us were actually above the prices that they were charging their direct customers. So I was wondering, like, when you're a competitive local exchange carrier, who do you buy bandwidth from? And if it's someone you're competing with, you know, how does that work into it?
Great question.
Yeah, and that's why we don't buy it from folks we compete directly with. And you know, I mean, and there's different. Some businesses are really focused on providing wholesale services for what we would buy. But in terms of the actual fiber in the neighborhoods, we actually put that out there ourselves, because in the long run we get a lot better economics in doing that. And you know, candidly, IP bandwidth is pretty commoditized right now. So there's a lot of places you can go with and buy from companies that I would call more honest brokers and have more of an interest in your success than the folks that you're competing head-to-head with every day. So, you know, the folks that we're competing with for those residential customers are not the people that we're going out and buying other services from.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I've always wondered that.
If I could ask a second question.
Sure.
You know, 1 gigabit is pretty fast. You know, you look at some of those things like T3s and stuff like that where people are paying like $10,000 a month, and the prices you're offering to residential are so low. I'm assuming that, you know, you don't expect anyone to be, you know, using that connection up to its capacity. What I mean is, like, I'm assuming there'll be some kind of, I don't know, I guess cap is kind of a dirty word, but, you know, throttling or something like that.
We don't cap, we don't throttle, use as much as you want. You know, I think from our standpoint, because we're putting fiber out there, it's, you know, our feeling is it's use it to the capacity and use it to the full potential. And, you know, I think for us, it's as a new entrant in the market, we've got to be better than what's out there, and we've got to be provide a different type service. So some of that, sure, too, sure, is just the market. And if you've got 90% of the market, it's really difficult for you to start charging your customers less and grow the business and please your shareholders. And that's not something that we've got to deal with. We're starting fresh and clean, and so we're building a network that can grow and expand. And, you know, we want to accommodate because we see the change that's coming in out there where people are going to consume video, and they've already started switching to, you know, voice over IP, and they're going to run more applications over this network. So, you know, we're not rolling out a bunch of old legacy services to on top of that. And we're just, you know, essentially saying, hey, I think Microsoft and Google and Apple and Amazon and Sony are going to be able to cut much better deals with the content guys than little old Greenlight Network. So that's why we didn't get into the TV business. We're letting them go cut those types of deals and work those out. And I think what you're already seeing, and even on the service side, the Netflix and those folks, they're all coming out with some really neat things. And I think that's the evolution. So what we want to be there is just to accommodate all the bandwidth that's going to be required on the back end to do that, and without having to worry about and protect another business that's generated a lot of income for our shareholders.
So no.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Thanks.
And, you know, great for Rochester, but I hope, you know, we'll see you guys or someone, you know, that's providing something like that, other areas of the country. So, yeah.
Tell all your pals in Hartford to go to the website.
Sign up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're certainly, I'm sure, not adverse. If enough people sign up in Hartford, they'll look at that.
I know there's fiber there.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot. Clearly, interest all over the country in this sort of thing. So, no caps, no limits, no throttling, no overages, none of that stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Odom, Mark Murphy, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We are Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Michael Roden.
And I'm Mark Murphy.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Just to finish up our last conversation before we move on, there are no caps. There is no throttling. Therefore, there's no overages. If you want to use a gigabit, knock yourself out. If you're on 100 megabit and you want to use a gigabit, pay more and then knock yourself out.
What is the total bandwidth of the fiber? Is that even a question? So is that 1 gigabit you get shared with your neighborhood, or does every house get its own 1 gigabit?
Every house has it. I mean, it can go up to a gig. So we're looking at different ways to continue to drive that price down and make it more affordable. And you know, it was interesting, the last caller who called in was talking about the equipment in the house and how expensive it is. The expense is really in putting the fiber in the neighborhood. That's where all the money is. The devices now are far more affordable, And, you know,
well, a mere $3 a month more.
Exactly.
Sorry.
And
five. Right. For only $5 more a month, you can get this one.
Yeah, right.
And again, you know, in an effort, like I said before, we try and keep it simple. So our device is just that optical network terminal, which basically sends a light back and forth. We let the customers provide their own routers. And in that way, they don't have to reset up the network in their house. They don't have to mess around with any of that. And, you know, what we'll usually do is help people out, give them, if it's time and you know, routers are really no different than a computer. After a few years, the technology changes. You got to have their, you know, all the software up or firmware updates going on. But those things can slow down after time. And now, you know, we just installed some the new Apple AirPort Extreme ACs.
Yeah.
Those are hot. I mean, we've had people in it, and it's great. You get coverage through the house, and it's because they're running over the 5 gigs. There's not as much interference, and
I like how they've shrunk the footprint, but they made it tall.
Yeah.
So no one puts anything on top of it, because we see that all the time. People put stuff on top of their wireless router, and that blocks the radio signal.
Yep.
Right.
So if it's too small to put anything on top of, you probably won't block the signal.
But it's fun now, because now that you can actually, you know, you give somebody a gig and it's actually faster than what the router in the house is providing. Yep. And it's been a long time since you've been able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. We have been saying that for years, is that that your router and your computer has had, you know, gigabit Ethernet for a long time now. Your Wi-Fi, you know, Wi-Fi N is 400 megabit. You know, even the original Wi-Fi B was 11. So it was faster than your 10 megabit Ethernet, but your internet signal is 3, 4, 5, you know, 10 if you're lucky, or a little faster if you pay more. And so now you're getting that gigabit internet, and now you need your gigabit wireless.
When I move files to my backup device, which is on the same network, they're both wired.
Yep.
Now I'm getting gigabit through my router, and it's, you hear the sucking sound as files move, boom, and. But the minute you do it over, you know, the air, it's that. We have to, before we get to the phones, one last question from the IRC chat, actually from the Hangout. Joe wants to know, what about running servers on your residential class service? Do you care?
And do you block any ports?
We don't block ports. There's no port blocking. I think ours is, we trust our customers, and you know, I think, what we're trying, it's clearly, and it's advertised as a residential service. So that's what that's the intent of it. Business class service would be more, and a lot of that is just because of the support involved and whatever else.
Of course.
Because it is more, and you want it, and you need to be more responsive for those business customers. So,
but if I wanted to run my Minecraft server,
My son would kill me if I didn't allow Minecraft on this thing. So yes, I would not. I would not have a fan at my house if we didn't have Minecraft on.
There you go. Yeah.
And my daughter too. She'd be very upset.
Sure. Okay. They're good. Good to know. So you can run those. You just have to make sure that turn your mic off. You have to make sure that your kids are happy. That's
right.
That's the whole point. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Greece, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
Thank you. I'm returning to several previous week's calls. This is on my attempting to get my laptop to connect to the internet. That it and this is with a wireless router. The last week when we talked, I had taken off one virus program, or I thought I had, but wasn't sure, so that you suggested downloading this program to make sure it was clean, and I did that, and I seem to be clean. I think I've gotten rid of the second virus program, but now I still try it. I get a message, you know, I get the sort of standard message, can't connect, and they offer some suggestions. One is to download new drivers. And so I did go to the Acer website and plugged in my model and, you know, came up with a list of drivers. I see two there that are for wireless. I guess my general question, and maybe we can shorten things up here, is this a productive avenue to follow, or is it not? Now I'll throw this on
top. How old is your laptop?
I'm sorry?
How old is your laptop?
8 years.
No.
Have you tried taking your laptop to a public Wi-Fi, like a coffee shop or bookstore, and see if it works there?
I have not.
Well, that's a good point. You should do that first. But an 8-year-old laptop, I don't know what your financial situation is, but if you can afford it, buy a new laptop.
Well, my wife just bought an iPad for her use, and that's why she was the one who was primarily using this. So I'm just kind of doing this for fun, and that's the question now. Is it worth pursuing?
Well, for fun, sure. So it may be the drivers for the built-in Wi-Fi. I'm assuming this is built into your laptop, the Wi-Fi card?
I assume it is. I mean, it's been working with our Wi-Fi system for several years.
So. Yeah. So it's trying your laptop in another location. We'll let you know whether it's the laptop or your router. And if it does happen to be the laptop, you can get an external USB Wi-Fi adapter for $30-$40.
Okay.
And that's a little cheaper than a whole new laptop.
Okay.
How old is your wireless router in your house?
Well, we just switched over to a Frontier a year ago. We went to Frontier, high speed, and the installer put in the Frontier router right in series with the previous router. When my wife brought the Apple home, we weren't able to connect. So with Frontier, we just eliminated the previous router. We're working on a 1-year-old Frontier router now, and that's been working with the Apple. And
that may be the problem. A brand new router with a very old computer. Do you know what kind of encryption you're running on your wireless? Is it WPA or WEP?
I do not.
What we've seen quite frequently is on an old Wi-Fi device like your computer, it may only support WEP encryption.
And XP in general.
Yeah.
Supports only WEP.
The Nintendo DS that my son had for a while only supported WEP. WEP can be broken with a pocket watch in 5 minutes.
If
you take your time, yeah. So there are newer wireless encryption standards, and the current one is WPA2.
Okay.
So it may be that your router is putting out WPA2, and your laptop cannot use WPA2. If you're lucky, a driver update from Acer, or whatever brand your computer is, can fix that. If you're not lucky, then a new Wi-Fi adapter.
Which you can probably do that at some, if in fact that's the problem, go find a public Wi-Fi.
With no encryption.
With no encryption and do that. The other thing you might do is look at your new router and see if you can have two separate signal sets. So, for example, on my router at home, my wireless router, I can have two separate networks, essentially.
Often a guest network.
A guest network. Yeah. And if you can set up a guest network, then you can either just always run off the guest network or use that to do your updating.
Okay, I'll have to say you got way over my head there.
I don't think the Frontier router can do guest.
No, I don't think they give you access to that.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just throw one more at you here. In downloading these drivers, it says, open the setup with. Do you have any guesses as to what type of program I need to use to open it?
What's the name of the file?
Setup.dll.
That's the wrong file. It should be setup.exe. It's either .exe, which is a Windows program, or .zip, which is a
I don't know where you got a setup.dll file.
A DLL is a dynamic link library, and that's a file that Windows uses internally. You cannot open it.
Okay, there is a setup.inx.
No.
Or a setup.iss.
No. Should be a setup.exe.
Or .com.
Or .com, maybe.
Mm.
Got back?
Not in the bundle that, you know, opened
well,
up.
Well, what you probably need to do then is go into...
Oh, yeah, load driver. Go into your device manager.
Right, go into your device manager, find the device that isn't working, say find the driver.
Or update driver.
Update driver, find it on your system, and it should find that driver and load it.
And then point it to the folder you downloaded the DLL with.
Right.
Or into.
Okay.
So it may not have an XE, it may just expect the Windows driver update. You see, usually when you hit Windows driver update, there's a have disk or browse, and you can pick it to another folder.
We got to move on.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Sure. We have a question off the air as well. We don't. Native IPv6 support? Of course you do IPv6.
No? We haven't rolled it out yet, just because a lot of the residential customers can't really do anything with it. We would love to go IP6 because it frees up a lot of... I mean, it's tough to get IP4s anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
The quicker we can do that, we would love it.
Most new operating systems will do it behind the scenes.
Right.
So if they're running Windows 7, they're running the Mac OS, they're running Linux, Android, iOS 7.
And I've also heard about some ISPs in some cities are NATing to the house. And so instead of getting a public internet address in your house, you're behind their NAT.
And all you need is one really humongous machine doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't, our customers get a public IP.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most people don't need a public IP unless you're running your own server or the Minecraft server or you're running Xbox or PlayStation. Then your box generally needs a public IP.
Or if you're doing VPN from the house or work stuff.
No, if you get a public IP, God bless you. All right. Our next caller is Joe from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joe.
Yes, guys. First of all, I want to thank Steve for helping out with our open house at Tech Age yesterday. But I have a question about Greenlight. What neighborhoods are currently is service currently available in the Rochester area, and what neighborhoods are upcoming?
Right now we're in Pittsford. We serve the village and areas in proximity to that. We've got a few apartment complexes, in particular the Erie Harbor folks down on Mount Hope, and we just turned up the Academy building on South Fitzhugh Street. The next ones coming up are going to be in the 12 Corners of Brighton area. We're going to start in the Meadowbrook development, and those folks have been just fantastic. Jim Kane and Monica there have been doing some great things to help us to promote the service in the area, and that's why we want to reward them and go there first. And then the South Wedge is, once we announced Brighton, the South Wedge exploded in. And if we don't get there soon, I may not have a house to return to. So we're going to,
You're bracketing me, you know, and it's making me a little more insane than I was earlier.
It's a neighborhood competition.
I'm going to have to leave you some door hangers next week and promote the service.
I'm in Pittsford, so I think I'll get in touch with our neighborhood association and see if we can drum up some business for you.
That'd be super. And if you go to the website and hit the sales piece, our folks can reach out to you and give you whatever you need to help.
I already did that.
Great.
Oh, good.
And especially considering the average price of internet service, about $50 a month, we get 100 gigabyte from Greenlight, and you get 10 from Time Warner, and you get 8 from Frontier.
If you do the math, the per megabit per second cost is ludicrously low. With the only one I've found that's lower is Google.
Yep. It's free for 5 meg.
Right. but other than that, they're orders of magnitude cheaper.
Yeah. It's almost the same argument we gave in the olden days to get Roadrunner when it was the only broadband service around, because you could give up your second phone line that you had to have and your phone dial-up internet service, and that paid for Roadrunner.
Right.
So now Roadrunner is falling behind, and we're doing the same argument with the next better guy.
There we go.
All right,
okay,
thanks, Joel.
Guys.
Yep.
Yep.
It's time to take a break. So we'll do that. And when we come back, we have more people on the phone. We have Mark here, and he'll be answering more questions. We have Mark Murphy. We have Michael Odom. We have Steve Ray. We have Nick Francesco. We have several people on the line, and we have all of you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. We continue to be Sound Bites, and we are delighted to say that we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Michael Roden.
And I'm Mark Murphy.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. We've got a full bank of calls. Let's see how far we can get. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester. Welcome. Steve, are you there?
No, push the button.
Oh, yeah, I got to let him.
Slide the slider. Wrong slider. There we go. There's the slider.
Old compact, and I'm playing Now You See It, Now You Don't with the hard drive. There was an undocumented command for master boot record replace, and I don't remember where that was. So I'm thinking maybe you two old guys might remember.
Yeah, I'm old, but I think it's F-disk.
F-disk?
Slash MBR.
I wasn't sure.
I think it's F-disk slash MBR.
MBR.
I'm looking that up right now, and in fact...
Rewrite the master boot record.
Yep, there it is.
And that does not delete anything else on the hard drive, because F-disk normally deletes everything.
Right. I've had trouble with this drive. I took it out of the machine, put it in another machine. I even booted it up in safe mode, and it works. Put it back in the machine, and it doesn't see it. So I'm thinking there might be something with the boot record that's causing it to be a little bit, now you see it, now you don't. I've done this twice now, so I thought, I don't remember the command.
There it is. Now you got it.
So I thought I'd call you two old guys to look it up for me.
There you go.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
All right. On to current things and more current questions. I'll be talking to you next time I have a hard problem.
Perfect. All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'd also be a little worried about the hard drive itself, too.
Well, I was about to say, if your machine is that old, then it is possible that the hard drive is simply going. And it could also be the controller in that machine. There may actually be nothing wrong with the hard drive. It may indeed be the controller itself. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
Hello. I just recently switched from McAfee to AVG, and everything was working fine. Now I'm getting a bunch of pop-ups.
Generally speaking, AVG leaves the pop-up suppression to the browser.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is go into your browser and tell it to suppress pop-ups.
Oh, okay.
And we're also seeing more and more websites are doing pop-unders, which are technically not pop-ups, and so they don't get blocked.
Right.
Okay. All right, I'll try that.
Yep.
Thank you.
And then what was that pop-up killer? Are they still around? Stopzilla, the pop-up killer?
Stopzilla, the pop-up killer. They were, we had them for a while. Good people, good product. If you don't have, most of them have their own now, so you don't know. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's up?
Hey, guys. I have a brand new Time Warner router that was replaced earlier part of this year, and the installer said that he would hook up the network as a public network. He said that's more secure than a home network. Now, is that really? That doesn't sound right, but is that true?
What?
No. Well, more secure for whom?
Hopefully for me.
Right. Generally speaking, your internet router, whether it's cable, DSL, fiber, whatever, will have a public address to get to the internet. And then what you want is your own private router on your own private network to give you private addresses. So that means it's more secure. People from the internet can't get into your network as easy. Now, both Frontier and Time Warner have a single box, which is a public router and private router in one box. So you don't necessarily need to have your own physical router. But they charge you rent for their router, so a lot of people like their own buying their own. But yeah, generally you want to have a private network for your computers, a 10 dot range or a 192 dot range, which means that you are insulated from most of the bad stuff coming into the network from the internet. The disadvantage there is that if you're running a server, your server has to be seen by the public internet. So that needs a public address. Or you need to set up in your router something called port forwarding so that your server can be seen by the public internet. But in general, no, you want a private network for yourself.
And in many cases, what you will see in the router is something called the demilitarized zone,
right,
which is really the same thing, only they call it.
Well, it sends all traffic to one computer.
Right.
Where with port forwarding, I have it on mine. I've got three video cameras that go to different computers. I've got my file server that goes one place. So I've got a huge port forwarding table because I have five or six different servers at our office that all serve different things. So they have to be forwarded to different places.
Well, on mine, when I click the icon in the system tray, it shows public network and home network. Now
Okay. That's completely different.
That's what I was talking about.
Okay. That's how Windows 7 talks about networks. Public network does not share any information from your computer to other computers on your network. So if you wanted to share files between, say, your computer and your wife's computer, you can't because it's been told it's a public network.
And therefore, it's more secure.
Okay, so they were right.
Yeah, we just misunderstood where they were setting that up.
Yeah. A public address is not secure. A public network is more secure.
And one last thing is, you guys donate your time every Saturday, and today's probably one of the most beautiful days of the year, and we really appreciate it. I don't know how many guys have told you, but we really do it because I know you guys are donating the time, and it's appreciated.
That's very nice. Thank you, Victor. We love to hear that. Thank you. The reality is we're geeks, so we don't go out in the big blue room when the light's on. We just don't do it. Thanks.
Yep.
Now, Mark, let me ask you for Greenlight. Do you provide, if I wanted a second IP address, so that I could have, for example, one to my private router network and then a second one for a server?
We could. I mean, we haven't been asked that one yet.
So well, here it is.
Here we go.
We're pretty sure high-tech private home users.
There we go.
I'm sure you would charge for that, and that's fair. I mean, that's the whole point. But, you know, we can't.
It would probably look more just like another static IP. So we charge $10 for a static, and if that's what you want, then, yeah, we can do that.
That's easy enough, then. That's a good answer. The idea is not a lot of people put up network servers in their homes, but the crowd you're preaching to here, that's what we do. We're geeks. We're proud of it. And if we took the time to look up from our keyboards, we would be proud of it, is what I'm trying to say. There's no question you're not going to get from these people. So there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about your stuff. Just to go back to it, if I want, you don't care if I fill up my, let's say I get the 100 megabit or the gigabit, you don't care if I fill it up.
No.
Because if I want to watch Netflix and my daughter wants to stream YouTube and my wife wants to stream something else, you don't care.
No. No, and that's, it would be pretty disingenuous for us to care if our whole mission is that's what we want you to do with it. So go to Netflix, go to Hulu, go to Amazon Prime, whatever it is you want to do, wherever you're streaming it from, have at it. And that's what we want people to do with our product.
That's been the argument and the fight between consumers and carriers is that here's all this great Netflix and Hulu and streaming video and giant files, but you only get 5 gigs a month.
Right. Right, and that's the truth about the phone. We went and bought my daughter a new phone before she went back to college because her old phone was, well, ancient. And don't think I haven't been hearing about that since the day she got it. But, the guy kept saying, and well, you can do this and you can do that. And I kept saying, no, you can't. No, you can't.
You can. You technically can, which is the best kind of can.
Right. You can stream movies for 5 minutes and then you've hit your limit. So don't even talk to me about that. Well, there's no you can't do it. So, but the thing is that having, as you said, not throttled, no caps, that's the way we all think the internet is supposed to work.
And at the moment, at least in Rochester, with the land-based internet services, there have been no caps. And every time one of the companies threatens to start a cap, we have Phil at stopthecap.com that publicizes it, Phil. And it gets stopped. Give me a call, Phil. We're looking at having you do a cord cutting meeting at Cider in October, because Nick is going to be at the September meeting.
Oh, I am. That's right, I am. I don't remember what I'm talking about, but it'll be fun.
But so it's fortunately in Rochester we don't have any caps. But in many other cities, there are caps, and people have fighted all day. And you have to go and do Netflix preferences and turn down the quality, or you know, one movie will blow through your whole month.
Right. Whereas if you get something that has no caps, like you know whatever, you don't worry about it anymore. I never want to have to worry. I mean, the whole point of the internet is to be able to communicate with people. If you had somebody following you around and counting the words you use and then slapping their hands over your mouth when you hit your limit of the number of words you could speak in a day, you would be kind of annoyed. And that's exactly what you get with caps. That's exactly what you get.
140 characters for 25 cents.
That's right. Message. That's right. I get annoyed when I use Twitter. What the hell do you mean I can't finish this sentence? I'm a writer. I don't do 2BJ14. I don't do that nonsense. So I want to be able to talk to people. I want to be able to communicate with people. I want to be able to round out what I'm doing. And that's going out as well as coming in.
Right. And, you know, we were talking about servers and things like that. And I think it's always interesting to see what the next generation is doing and how they interact with things. And, you know, when my son and daughter are doing their Minecraft stuff, they also have FaceTime up and all their buddies are on there. And that's how they're communicating. Where I'm not sure the collective, our generation, has embraced video conferencing like kids are. And I think that's going to become more prevalent. And, you know, when you have that much video being streamed, it requires more bandwidth. And you're right. You don't want to. I think part of the issue is not only just the technology, but why do you want to cap that? Yep. And it's
ridiculous.
I think it's largely artificial, because those guys just need to find ways to continue to grow revenue. And the unlimited plans don't necessarily allow you to do that. And as a monopoly, and if you've got 90% or a huge share, and you can't grow your business on grabbing share and getting new customers, you've got to monetize the ones you got. Yep.
Have your kids discovered Kerbal Space Program yet?
Not yet, but hopefully they're listening in now.
It's similar to Minecraft, but you're building spaceships and colonizing other planets.
Now I'm interested.
Yeah, my son is into that now a lot more than Minecraft.
All right, we are done for another week. I really want to thank Mark Murphy, who was kind enough to come in and join us from Greenlight Networks and shared his expertise and his humor. Terrific meeting you. Great, great stuff. I want to thank Steve Ray, who managed to sit next to me for 2 entire hours. Michael Odom, who did a great job over on the buttons. Don't go away, because the best German music you will hear all week is about to come up. George is going to play that for you. We'll be back next week with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites at 55 minutes after, 56 minutes after the hour, on the longest-running computer show in the known universe on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be right back.